Very special show today.
Yes,
extremely special show. You want to introduce our guest? Do you want me to?
Absolutely.
Please do.
If anybody listened to this show and would remember that back on January 8th, we had a phone interview with a noted author, Tom Cotter, who wrote such hits as The Hemi in the Barn, The Cobra in the Barn, Dean Jeffries, The Life and Times. That's a long title. I don't remember it verbatim. And it went over very well.
Holman Moody,
right?
Yes.
With such other hits to come out as the Vincent in the Barn.
That is the new one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a book about TV Tommy Iovine that I want to talk about. Well,
yes.
That's who we have in the studio with us today.
Tom Cotter himself. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine, thanks.
Thank you for being here with us.
You know, I haven't been on this campus for 3.5 decades, but I was telling Ray, I started my racing career in 1973 in that parking lot. Running an autocross like they're running right now.
Oh, come on. Really?
In a Pinto with an automatic. I won a trophy. I was hooked.
Right.
Do you still have the trophy?
I have the trophy. I don't have the Pinto, but the lady that owned the Pinto, my girlfriend, is now my wife. So
so, so you have the previous owner of the car is the only thing that's missing in this.
Right. Good riddance.
That's funny.
As is such the case with
yes, Pintos like in that. General. So how did you actually start your racing career?
Well, in this parking lot, Nassau Community College. It was a PCA event. I was a car guy my whole life, and that was just the first way I was able to kind of do it. You know,
right.
It's cheap. It was $12, and you could run out there, ruin your tires in one afternoon. And from there, I went to Bridgehampton and started running time trials around there, which is high-speed lapping, but not wheel-to-wheel,
mm-hmm.
and I started to do that at Pocono at Lime Rock, and then I got my racing license and a Datsun 510 and started to run all those tracks. And
wow.
So I guess I've been, you know, wheel-to-wheel racing now, I think, since about 79 or 80, so I must be old for it.
You know, and I'll give you the new equivalent of that, Tom. If you want, you can take a drive down to Bell Parkway, go over the Verrazano Bridge. It's probably about $12 by now, and you'll still ruin your tires, and you'll be amongst wheel-to-wheel with crazies, that,
yeah.
Except these crazies don't know how to drive.
Some things just never change, right?
No.
That is incredible.
But I've always been an amateur racer. That's all I do. You know, I've run the Monterey Historic races, which are this weekend and next week. I've run those 5 times.
Oh, I love those.
And then this is a blast. I ran a couple of weeks ago in Connecticut at Stafford Springs in the 24 Hours of Lemons race.
Right.
Yes.
And I ran up there, and I'm going to do it again in September down in Carolina in a Mercedes-Benz, believe it or not.
That's Jay Lamb's gig, right?
And it is a blast.
Oh,
we were talking in the parking lot about authors we've had on the show, and Jay Lamb was, I think, the first that we got.
One of our first, yes.
And we had such a ball with Jay, and we were supposed to get up there for that event. He invited us up. I was in South Carolina that weekend, so mm-hmm. that week, so we couldn't make it.
Yeah, awesome. There's 10 of those around the country now, and they are worth going to, well, to, if you can drive in one. I mean, it's not very technical. You pay your $50 and you're qualified.
Right.
You
know,
that gets you a license.
It is true, I guess, that if you set up a car for that event, it could easily cost you more for the safety equipment than for the car itself.
Oh, probably. The car, you know, they're pretty strict on, you know, don't try to tell me you paid $500 for this car. Get out of here.
Yeah.
You have a 50-lap penalty. But, you know, so the car is pretty strict, but there's no limit to the amount of safety. So that includes, you know, roll cage, fire system, fuel cell, tires, brakes. I mean, in theory, you could put a $5,000 set of brakes on the car, you know, should you want to go that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, real brief, what is the 24 Hours of Lemons for those who don't know?
Well, it's a road race for frustrated sports car people that can't afford to go big time. So
right.
they are restricted to a car that they pay $500 or less for.
Uh-huh.
And these races traditionally, it's the 24 Hours of Lemons, but they usually run about 15 to 17 hours.
Okay.
Because they stop in the middle of the night. Cars don't have headlights. So they stop in the middle of the night and they start again the next morning.
Right.
Lots of cars. 80, 85 cars on a track, on a half-mile track. So each car has about 40 feet of real estate.
Wow.
And but see, that's when everybody's on the track, which is not very often because they start breaking down pretty quickly. And before you know it, you got a clean track.
I was going to say, that 40 feet of real estate's more than on the Bell Parkway.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's but luxurious.
The only difference is you have a pit crew at the 24 Hours of Lemons to fix your car, unlike the Bell Parkway.
You didn't see those guys over by the drawbridge? The jacks and the... Yeah, I thought that was a pit crew.
They take all the parts and run with them.
Oh, see, I thought they were a pit crew of somebody.
Yeah, no, no.
I know they had, like, gas can and a jack, and I didn't know the stuff was going negative. I didn't know it was going negative.
That stuff wasn't a gas can, that's for sure. But they do take parts off very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I saw. I thought I was seeing a tire change.
So that's basically what it is. It's like an enduro for pieces of junk, basically.
Right, and you know they have funny contests and like if you are too aggressive a driver, if you pass under yellow, if you just being too aggressive, they'll pull you in, and there are penalties. Like I put 4 wheels off. I got 4 wheels off into the grass.
Right.
Well, here's a black flag. So I got to go in, and here's all these 6 guys standing around, and I'm waiting for my punishment. So I can jump out of the car, and they say, you know what? It's really hot. We all would like ice cream. And I've got a driver's suit and a helmet on it. Where do I get ice cream? So, well, there's a machine over there. So I run back to my car. I get a $10 bill out. I run over to the machine, and the ice creams are $2 each. But there's 6 guys.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So then I had to run and get change. Then I'd come back with singles and start. The dollar bills are coming.
You get the one that it wouldn't accept, and you had to try it 5 times.
Feeding the dollar bill into the machine.
Yeah, meanwhile, the cars are going around the track. And so.
Wow.
So, you know, I had to get 3 strawberries and 3 chocolates. So then I had to go borrow $2 from a stranger, and I got all 6, and I said, okay. But they have awards like when they go to South Carolina, there's a grocery store chain called Piggly Wiggly.
Sure.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they go and buy this box of 10. Cupcakes with like this metallic blue frosting, and you've got to eat a whole box of these things. You know?
Oh my gosh!
Or there's another one where they spray you with Karo oil, and they beat you with pillows with feathers, so you get tarred and feathered. And then there's the Max Mosley Award, which is they have these 2 German women dressed in costume, and they whip you.
Wow. So, you see what we missed, Ray?
Sounds like a Saturday night in Brooklyn.
Oh, my God.
You didn't miss a thing.
You know, getting whipped by 2 German women, then that's a race.
It is. Endurance.
That's an endurance.
And then there was these 4 guys they had, and they were 4 drivers that were overly aggressive. So they had all 4 guys back-to-back, kind of, and they tied them all together. So one was facing this way, that way, that way, and that way.
North, south, east, and west.
And they had to walk from one end of the paddock to the other. Like that.
Wow.
Sideways, backwards.
Cool. We would not survive, right?
No.
We would certainly not survive.
So you know, that's, I think for this economy, you know, that's the perfect way to go racing. Cheap cars, lots of fun, and you don't have to be a millionaire to do it.
I'll tell you, Tom, when I first read what Jay Lamb was doing, I was totally jazzed by it, just for that same reason. I said, this has got to be the most fun on 4 wheels with your clothes on, well, except for the German women and the whip.
Right, right.
But that has got to be the most fun.
It's a blast.
In fact, that was the thing we had read. I got a copy of Jay's book, You Are What You Drive, and read it and said, I got 2 stories in, was laughing my butt off and said, this is great. This guy, you know, he fits right in. He's like one of us. And went through Motorbooks, and of course, Nicole Scheel, who is a great proponent of this show, has hooked us up with so many authors like yourself. And, I don't remember. I guess she did get us, Jay.
She did.
And I said, you know what? That formed that synergy and the bond that we have. And Jay did call, and again, the hour wasn't fast. It wasn't long enough.
Right.
It went way too fast because he was just, what a funny guy.
Yeah, it really was. And it can be heard still on motormouthradio.com, which is great. We did something with pretty much Jay was one of the proponents. We started the Motormouth Radio Lecture Series. So all of the authors that have come on, and it has really been, and Ray was exceptional in gathering everybody together, yourself included, to do this, and it has been such a success. People have always been asking us about it and saying how great it is.
Do listeners know how fancy your digs are here? I mean, do they know I mean, I can see all of Nassau County from where I'm sitting right now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
A test track around the building.
Right.
You guys really have it slick.
Well, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, we have the
radio of the mind.
The fresh fresh smell of paint. And so we're actually getting a redo in
that
here.
That kind
which
of
is,
enhances the show a little bit.
I think
bit
this is the first time since 43 this place has been redone. I mean, you can see the great, you know, the great energy-efficient windows we have. It's single-pane glass with bars on it.
I like the window behind me with the sign that says, this window must remain closed. Yeah, and is open. It closed?
No.
It's open.
No.
It's just classic.
No, no, not many people realize the lap of luxury that we live in, Tom.
Yes,
and
the shops.
We try to portray... you know, the image as best we can.
Theater of the mind.
Theater of the mind is right.
Yeah, try and explain everything as best we can. So speaking of explaining everything as best we can, please tell us a little bit about the Cobra in the Barn first and the Hemi in the Barn. How did you write such fascinating stories? How did you decide to get up the guts and the brains to do this? It's remarkable.
They kind of write themselves, but, you know, this is what I've been doing my whole life. When I was a kid... riding home on the bus. You know, I grew up out in Holbrook, went to Sachem School District, and I would look out the window of the bus and see cars in people's backyard. And then that weekend, I'd go back on my bicycle and, you know, talk about the car and is it for sale. So what I've been doing my whole life is just now I'm just putting it down on words.
Right.
So the way the first book started was I had an agency. I moved down from Long Island to Charlotte to get involved in NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to work for the Speedway, and then ultimately owned my own agency. And then somebody came along and offered me money to buy it. I said, I don't want to sell it. And they said, well, how about for this much? I said, well, it's yours.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I did is I bought a Cobra. You know, I mean, that's my lifelong dream is to own a 289 Cobra. So I bought one.
Right.
And I bought it in San Francisco, and a friend of mine, Peter Egan from Road and Track Magazine, and I drove it across the United States, and it was a great story. And we took 9 days and just took all two-lane roads, and we stayed in old hotels. And
wow.
It was a trip of a lifetime. You know, so it was a two-seater car that a million people went along for the ride. And so it appeared in Road and Track. And then I get a call from a neighbor of mine. Literally, you know, his house is probably a half mile from mine, but our property lines match. And he said, I like the story of Road and Track. I happen to love AC Cobras. And by the way, I have an AC also in the barn. Well, I've been passing by this barn, you know, for 2 decades in down North Carolina. And this guy lives next door to me. I've never met him because he's too far away.
Right.
And anyway, he's got a car that went off the same assembly line in England as mine went off. And so I happened to talk to the I had just written the Holman and Moody book, and I talked to my publisher, and I said, guess what? My next-door neighbor's got, and he said, Tom, there's your next book, The Cobra in the Barn. I said, son of a gun.
Wow.
So it started a franchise, The Cobra in the Barn, Hemi in the Barn. Hemi came out, what, a year ago? Cobra came out 3 years ago. Coming out in about 3 weeks is the Vincent in the Barn, a motorcycle book.
Yeah.
And then I'm now working on the Corvette in the Barn, although motor books would like to call it the Stingray in the Barn, where we have this little hand wrestling going on. The Corvette in the Barn, hopefully. So it started this franchise, and where it'll end, I don't know. But what I tell car enthusiasts is that if you put it next to your toilet and you're regular... mm-hmm. You'll read it in a month.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Of course.
One story every session.
Great. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, if
definitely.
You want,
you're
you
absolutely
want,
right.
You can be like,
we say the same thing about shop manuals. First thing you should do with a shop manual when you buy the car is put it in the bathroom. Put it next to the toilet. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, if you want to do like the Schwinn in the barn or the paint can in the barn, you could visit Chris's house and you get to see like the nuts and bolts in the barn.
Yeah, the possum in the barn.
Well, I had the same unruly experience.
We both could write that story.
We could, yeah.
So I don't know when I'll run out of names. You know, like I guess I've reached the end of the line when I go to the Humber Super Snipe in the barn, or Hillman Minx in the barn.
Now, the Hillman Minx, that'd be interesting.
There you go.
Right.
Why are you and Motorbooks having a arm wrestle with the title?
Well, see, I said Corvette in the barn. They said good. Well, they go to their editorial review board and they say, okay, the contract's clear and all that stuff. But let's call it Stingray. Well, to me, if a wife is buying a book for her husband for Christmas, and he's a Corvette guy, he could have a 54, he could have a 2004.
Yeah. And those aren't Stingrays.
Right. A Stingray is just kind of one segment of the Corvette genre.
Those
that,
are the, yeah,
that,
the mid-years.
That, you know, that I'm not sure it's going to click to as many people.
Right.
So, Stingray has a certain appeal. It comes off the tongue nicely.
True.
You know, it's a nice word to see, I think. But
could there be a caveat at the other end of the title where it would say the Stingray in the barn and other Corvettes?
Well, it's not going to just be about Corvettes. Oh. There'll be Hillman Minxes in there and Humber Super Snipes. Yeah,
yeah, because, yeah, your other books had other cars in them as well.
Right.
It just happens to be one cool story. And I've got a cool story. This guy over here in Valley Stream has found a bunch of racing Corvettes. Really cool stuff. I just wrote a story on a 57 Corvette, a big block a big tank airbox car that was built for Sebring.
Wow.
You know, the guy just found that thing. So, I mean, there's cool cars out there.
Now, the big tank is the large gas tank, correct?
Large gas tank and an airbox. Interestingly, it was an induction system for this Rochester fuel injection. They had 283 engines, and they had this box that would kind of take cold air in, and it would share that cold air with the injection system and the left rear brake. And at acceleration, these cars required so much air for the engine that the left rear brakes were burning out. So the cars never ran at Sebring with the air boxes like that because they would work well for a while and the left rear brake would boil and that would be the end of it. So, but you know, they made I'm guessing this, I don't have like 35 of those airbox cars, and this guy just found one.
Wow.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I have to say, since, you know, when you mentioned Valley Stream, I think my head went to the same place Chris's went, because we have a mutual friend who's been on the show who used to road race Corvettes back in the through the 60s and 70s.
Frank Demiani.
I'm going to go see him tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Well, he just let me go through his shop. I was there 4 weeks ago, and he said, go take one. Now, I happen to be a Briggs Cunningham freak, and he purchased all the Briggs Cunningham stuff that Ted Tappet had in Freeport when they were building the Fortilax, and he's got boxes he hasn't opened on shelves. He said, go look up there. I put them up there like in, you know, 59 or something. Go take a look, you know. Well,
wow.
I mean, so I went through there. First of all, they're very dusty. But, you know, it's like filled with Fiat head gaskets and things like that. You know, it wasn't very intriguing, but...
Well, that's the part of the shop I want to go back to, you see, because...
Exactly.
I need a couple head gaskets.
Yeah.
And Briggs Cunningham is a innovator in his own right, a former race car driver and sports car builder.
Right.
Back in the 50s, I would say.
Well, he entered Le Mans in 1950 for the first time with the two Cadillacs.
Right.
I mean, I have a little museum at home on a shelf.
Yeah.
I met Briggs. I met his son, his daughter's grandson. I almost met his wife, and I hope to meet her this year. She's still alive. She's almost 100.
Wow.
Lives in Connecticut. I've been to the museum when it was open out in Costa Mesa. I've been to the Collier Museum down in Naples, Florida. And I've just found a barn find Cunningham that nobody knows about. Wow. It's a C3 coupe. It hasn't been in public for 40 years.
Holy.
And I'm kind of dancing with the owner on this. So that's my dream.
Wow. To a barn find Cunningham, original Cunningham. Now, how many of those cars were actually produced in the 50s offhand?
Well, as far as race cars, he probably built about 7 or 8 race cars, but he had to homologate them, and so he had to show that he's building production cars. So they were so expensive. Talking like in 52, 53, they were $15,000.
Wow.
He built somewhere between 18 and 20 coupes
and
probably 3 roadsters. So this is one of the coupes. How do you find something like that?
Yeah.
Wow. And that is totally incredible.
And this is how you find barn finds. I'm sitting at the SCCA dinner for the Southeast region. And I'm just sitting with a guy next to me. We're talking about cars and Cobras and what's your fantasy car. And I said, you know, my fantasy car is a Cunningham. He said, I know a guy's got one in his garage. That changed my life.
Yeah.
A simple line, one line.
You got to talk. Everybody you sit next to in an airplane or anywhere, you just got to wear the right shirt or wear the right hat, and it starts conversation.
Wow. Usually gets us in trouble. We wear these, we get beat up, things thrown. That's when we'll give out T-shirts. We'll tell people, you wear this at your own risk because you may get things thrown at you.
Yeah, right. Car parts or...
No motor mouth.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm glad that question led to the Cunningham as... It led to Frank Demignani, because he is a good friend of the show.
He was a B production national champion, 64 in a Corvette.
I mean,
cool guy.
Unbelievable. Like I said, I'm going to stop in tomorrow to see Frank, because I promised I'd catch up to get him back on this show.
Well, tell him I said hi.
I mean, sure will.
It's amazing, a guy that opened a speed shop, like what, in 47 or something, it's still in business.
Yeah. He was actually next door. The shops next door was his original shop.
Right.
Then he moved to Sunrise Highway. And then when this building that he's in came up, he bought that somewhere in the 40s. He did a catalog business. And, and he said his wife used to take the stuff to work. She worked in the city, and they would mimeograph it, he said. It was that blue. And that's what he would send out for, like, I think it's like 5 cents, the catalog. He was selling old glass pack mufflers and things like that. And it grew into high-speed automotive.
Son of a gun. Let's take a quick break now. We have Tom Cotter with us, the author of The Cobra in the Barn, The Hemi in the Barn, and soon to be released, The Vincent in the Barn, and a lot of good stories. Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. This is Motormouth Radio. Keep it where you got it.
The Motormouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
This is a potted plant. You can't see it because this is radio. You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
How's that cooked?
How do you change the ringtone?
How much does this cost?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life, except...
Any questions?
No.
At the doctor's office, ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Your car not running right? Let the Motor Mouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. We will be taking those calls. 516-572-7440. If you'd like to speak to Tom Cotter, author of Hemi in the Barn, The Cobra in the Barn, and soon to be released, The Vincent in the Barn. Classic motorcycles buried in assorted barns and basements and all kinds of places. What any highlights from that book as far as stories are concerned?
Oh, yeah. I have to say that I'm a car geek. I had to learn about motorcycles. But man, oh, man. I mean, The Vincent is such an incredible motorcycle in itself. I've got in there the Broff that Lawrence of Arabia got killed on.
Wow.
I mean, there's one guy that I met that went to Russia to buy cars and motorcycles and maybe old aircraft.
Right.
And he found 14 Indians and Harleys around Russia, in Estonia, Russia, up into Siberia. He got them for next to nothing, but he had to smuggle them out of the country.
That's the thing, getting them out.
Yeah, I believe it.
He had to pay people off. He had to have, planes land in the middle of the night and no lights. And I mean, this is a mystery
stuff.
There was
a story like that in one of your previous books.
The same guy,
okay,
on different trips, would go for cars and then motorcycles.
Okay, yeah.
So these were BMW, Indian, and Harleys. The Harleys and Indians were given to Russia by the U.S. government to go fight the Germans. The BMWs, which had all sidecars, which is interesting, they had sidecars, and they were two-wheel drive. It was a live rear axle.
Right.
So they were built for Rommel's desert assault in Africa, and when that failed, they flew them all up into the Kuril Islands, which borders Japan and Russia, and they'd use them up there for fighting. So these things are out there.
Wow. Holy cats. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you wouldn't. I think about that when I watch the History Channel and the Military Channel, and you watch some of the war footage, and you see all these vehicles that are just ditched and dropped in lakes, and you wonder how many are still there, and probably quite a few of them.
I believe it.
Somebody asked me if I'd consider doing a book on armament. Because there are guys that go around the world, Africa and Antarctica, and unearth old bombers and stuff like that, and they're parked in the ice or whatever. It would be a neat book to do, but I think it would be too expensive to do.
I think so.
Fly around. Yeah,
I saw a show. I guess it was on. It was in the History Channel Discovery a few years ago, where they unearthed a bomber that was, I think it was like 70, 80 feet below the ice, and they dug the cavern and they had to excavate and take the thing apart and bring it up through these channels. It was phenomenal.
Wow,
phenomenal! Yeah. And then they restored the plane,
and then it burned to the ground.
Did it?
That's the one.
Oh.
Yes,
the fuel line broke and it just burned to the ground. Years of work.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. But there's barn finds. I mean, I talked with Sam Posey, race driver.
Sure.
And he's a big train guy. And he said, there are people go to yard sales and estate sales buying old Lionel train sets. There's people there's a whole industry for that type of thing. So I guess I could take this anywhere.
Oh, you can on a smaller level. Chris and I share a little thing. Little Aurora race cars.
Sure.
I have a collection myself. I have about four tackle boxes full of them. Mm-hmm. And I told my wife, I said, when the day comes where I'm not around anymore, you don't throw these out. This goes on the list of all the other stuff I have. And you got to call one of a few select friends who knows what to do with this stuff, because it's not, it's a toy, but it's worth it. It has a value these days.
Yeah, when I got my first Aurora set when I was a kid, AFX Model Motoring, they were made in Hempstead.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
that's right.
Very true.
Yeah, right on Hempstead Turnpike.
I have a very good friend who his aunt actually worked for Aurora. And we used to laugh because every time she would arrive at the house, she would show up with a brand new Aurora car. And we'd be like, whoa, that's cool.
Cherry Lane or Cherry something,
one of them, right, she actually worked for the company. Yeah. That's way too funny. That's true. So where were some of the weirdest places that people bury motorcycles?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a guy, Dale Waxler, who owns a museum called Wheels Through Time, and it's in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. He had been a Harley dealer, And he was kind of a long hair, hippie kind of motorcycle guy when he went to college. But what he would do is get on his little Honda, whatever he had, and go out and meet old Harley dealers, old guys, guys that owned Harley Davidson dealerships since the 30s or the 20s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd go out, be able to go and buy all their inventory, buy bikes and stuff. Well, he still does that today. He's not a Harley dealer anymore, but he's got a museum of 300 running, unrestored bikes, racing motorcycles, police motorcycles. It's unbelievable what he's got.
Wow.
All but three, I think, are American, and three of them are some other, you know, other countries. But he's built this museum that's just unbelievable. So he gets on the road. He just gets on the road. He gets mm-hmm. on the road with a box truck, and he and a buddy, and they just hit the road for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, they just go to a bar, a restaurant, a little town in Utah or something, and start talking about, oh, yeah, he's got an old dealership. Full, you know, it's been closed up for years, and he's still buying this stuff.
Wow.
You know? Another one, neat story, you know, a guy, his parents, when they were first married, they had a Honda Dream, 305 Dream. That was their only wheels, you know, and mm-hmm. red. It had a windshield and white wall tires, and it was a cute little rig. And, you know, when he was born, they sold it. Well, he found one just like it and bought it back, gave it to them on their 50th wedding anniversary. You know, there's just cool stories. Another guy I met out in California, he got tired of the motorcycle collector scene. Too expensive, too snobby, whatever. So now all he does is restore vintage motorbikes. Not whizzers, but unusual things like weird German ones, like Miele's and stuff like that.
Right.
And the very first mini bikes.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And he restores them to these Concourse levels. He's out in Ojai, California.
Concourse.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
My friend Kevin and I, we go to all the local swap meets and shows, and Kevin built a mini bike for his son, Chris. In fact, I borrow that for my Father's Day show every year so I can get around the field. And every year I have that bike there, people stop me. Hey, you want to sell it? How much you want for it? Because he did a nice little restoration on this thing.
Yeah. Want to see if we can take a phone call?
Yeah, sure.
Let's try this. Hi, you're on with the Motormouths and Tom Cotter.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Who's this?
It's Bob from Freeport.
Hey, what's doing?
I'm doing good. I'm heading down to the Meadowbrook, heading down to the water.
Okay.
So I was listening to your program, and I remembered the Winter program.
You remember the...
With your guest on in January.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask him, so between either vintage or muscle, have him give us two great finds on Long Island. What are his two favorite finds on Long Island?
Tom, two great finds on Long
vintage
Island.
Classic, muscle, whatever they were.
Whatever I want. Okay, let's see. Because, see, I've been off the island now for 25 years, but... actually, my first real barn find, second real barn find... was in Brentwood, and it was on Wicks Road in Brentwood. I was going to Seton Hall High School, and I went over to visit a friend in Brentwood. His name is Xavier Lucena, and we were walking around his neighborhood, and I see, like, there's this barn, and there's a Woody next to it. And so I go running around to, you know, the fence and go knock on the door. Can I take a look at the Woody? The lady says, oh, sure, go look at it. I was 15. It was a 39 Ford Deluxe. It had owned by her son, who was a surfer. I wanted to buy in that car for $300, and it's sitting in my garage today. I never got rid of it. So I've still got it today. I bought it in 69, so 40 years ago.
Son of a gun.
And then a couple of years ago, I was visiting my mother-in-law in Ronkonkoma, and I'm a runner, so I go out running in the morning. And I ran past the house, and I said, I remember when I was a kid looking out the windows of the school bus, this guy had cool cars.
Right.
So I knock on the door. You know, it was like 30 years early. I knock on the door, and the guy that lived there died, but his wife said, you know what, I just decided I'm going to sell all his cars. And I bought from him an Abarth Mono Miele coupe, an aluminum coupe.
On Long Island.
On Long Island. Oh, yeah, actually in Neskonset. And right off Neskonset Highway, he bought it new. He went to the factory in Italy. I had letters. I got all the letters. I got everything.
Wow.
So that's just two here. But, man, I found cars... I found a really cool Shelby GT500 in Lincolnton, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
32,000 mile original owner car. That's a barn find. I mean, a cool car. It looks. If you get Hemmings Motor News, they use it on this subscription card. It's a green car with worn out black stripes and the paint's peeling off.
I've seen it.
Right. Well, that's my car. They love it.
I was going to say the Abarth. The Aboth and the Woody are both in your book. Which book? I confuse them because the stories all blended together for me.
Well, you got to buy them.
You got to get them both because the stories are in the book. Yeah.
Tom, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right.
You too. Bye bye.
So people really do listen to this show.
Yeah, occasionally.
Believe it or not.
You did send him the check, right?
Of course I did. 516-572-7440. You want to take a quick break?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. We'll knock this one out real fast.
All right.
We have Tom Cotter, author of The Hemi in the Barn, The Cobra in the Barn, soon to be released, to The Vincent in the Barn, Great Motorcycle Finds in a Basement Maybe Near You. Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. We have more of Motormouth Radio, and guess what? It's coming your way.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said Motormouth.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
You have a short in your horn.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Your car not running right? Let the Motormouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motormouth Radio. We are taking those calls. 516-572-7440 on this Sunday afternoon. Tom Cotter, famed author of The Hemi in the Barn, The Cobra in the Barn, The Vincent in the Barn, soon to be released, and also we'll be talking about TV Tommy Ivo and his bio on him as well. And we're going to take a call. We're going to talk to Eric, who's on the road. What's up, brother? How are you?
Hey, yeah, I'm great. I have a 67 PSA. It's original condition, and I'm the second owner. And every time I take it anyway, everybody says, well, if I had that, I would restore it. And I've had it for like 15 years, and I don't want to restore it.
Good idea.
Yeah, well, what do you think about that? Is it better to restore something, or is it because, you know, I mean, it looks so much nicer if it's restored and everything you see is restored.
You know, Eric, Tom, let me interrupt you for a second. Before Tom goes, I want to give you a saying that I've heard many, many times, and that is a vehicle can be restored many, many times, but it's only original once.
With that in mind, Tom, please.
You know what? I love vehicles that are original. They have the patina on them. I'm sure you get much more attention with your motorcycle the way it is than if it were restored. People would walk by and nod their head and smile and keep going. But yours is the kind of vehicle that people, stop and scratch their head and say, wow, why is it like this?
Sounds like our cars, Chris.
Yeah.
They said, why is he driving this?
You know, I have that Shelby Mustang I got. It's a barn find. And I took it to a Shelby meet, and this... it was down in Virginia, and this guy came up to me. He's like a mafia guy from New York, right? He says, so are you going to restore it, or are you going to sell it? And I said, neither.
Right.
And he scratches his head and walk away.
Never, ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, keep it that way, because the BSA mechanics that built that bike, they're the last guys to touch those bolts. It's really a BSA. Once you take it all apart, it becomes an Eric. It's not a BSA anymore.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it starts on the first kick every time.
Oh, yeah. God.
Wow. I agree. Plus, when a bike or a car is restored, you know, implicitly, it looks like all the other restored ones, and people are maybe afraid to approach it or afraid to breathe on it, right. And your bike is...
I'm sitting in my house one day. I get a phone call from my brother-in-law in Delaware.
Yeah.
He says, listen, there's an old motorcycle on the front lawn down the block from me. I think you might be interested in it.
Wow.
I went up there, gave the guy the money. He said, the kids in the neighborhood want to buy it, but they want to chop it.
No.
I said, no, dude, I'll be up next week with the trailer. Thanks a lot, man.
Right.
That's great. Don't touch it. If it runs, keep it the way it is. Just get it mechanically perfect.
Exactly.
So that was a yard find.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 516-572-7440 if you'd like to talk to famed author Tom Cotter.
I tell you, that's what happened years after I, you know, moved out of my mom's house. We always had left a car in the driveway. The Riviera was there for many years. Mm-hmm. And everyone, so she always tell me, you know, there was a couple guys came to the house again this week asking about the car. I'm like, not for sale. Mm-hmm. But you could see it from the street. And I said, Ma, they're just doing what car guys do. Right. They're knocking on the door. I said, if they go in the backyard, shoot them. I said, you know, you send one over the head. But I said, they knock on the door and they're polite, just politely, you know, take their phone number, tell them, yeah, I'll have my son call you. And of course, I never will.
Right.
And yeah, but that's what we do.
That's incredible. Yeah. So you had mentioned, I remember the story about acquiring the Shelby, that was also acquired from one line that was just spoken to you, correct?
Well, the Shelby, I knew about that car. Lots of people knew about it.
Oh, okay.
Some people had seen it, but not many. But everybody knew that, Bob has this old Shelby. And he owned a little luncheonette in Lincoln, North Carolina.
Great story.
You know, just a little luncheonette. And people would go in there, hey, I heard you got a Shelby. I'll offer you $10,000 for it, or I'll offer you $12,000 for it. And no, I'm not interested, you know. Well, I'd go in there and order pancakes. And I'd go in there and order cheeseburgers. And, you know, and then I'd bring a magazine. Hey, because I knew we liked old Fords. And then when I came out with the Holman and Moody book, I said, Bob, I got something special for you. And it's like, wow, man, lunch is on me today. You know, and he's flipping through this thing. He was loving it because he used to buy parts from Holman and Moody when he raced a Mustang back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, after lunch, want to go take a look at that Shelby? Wow.
Boy.
So, yeah, I had nothing better to do. Sure.
Exactly.
And then,
I have nothing better to do now.
And then, he just lived a few blocks away, and there it was. And I said, you want to sell it? He said, well, no, not really. I just had a guy get it running again. It hasn't been running so many years. He had to change the gas tank because it rusted out, and the fuel lines are clean. But you know what? So many guys have made me offers, and I know they're lowball offers. Take a look at it. So he started it up. It's got the original muffler on it. It's got a hole in it. But, I mean, I'm talking original heater hoses, original air in the tires.
Wow.
So he said, make me an offer. So I said, $65,000. He said, you just bought yourself a car.
Yeah. You did the smart thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, I offered him fair market value.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So within 24 hours, I get a phone call from this guy, and I know exactly who he is. His name is Andy Killian. He lives in Hickory. I heard you bought a car. He didn't even identify who he was. I knew it. I heard you bought a car. I've been trying to buy it for 20 years. What'd you do? Well, I ordered pancakes. I ordered a cheeseburger.
I brought him a book.
And I made him a fair offer.
That right. You figure out which one of those things was the kicker. Which one actually sealed the deal.
Incredible.
I guarantee. You know what? I mean, I'd like to do this sometime. I guarantee within 10 miles where we are right now, there's a car that nobody knows about. I'd love sometime to go on a wild goose chase. I'll just start right here, and somebody can put a stopwatch on me and see how long it takes to get back here, and I'm going to tell you about a car that you never knew about.
That's what happened with my own car. I mean, I talk about a car that I've had since 75 that's not on a road. It's registered, but not on a road. And Chris included said, boy, I don't believe you. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen the light of day.
Is that the 442?
No, it's a GTO.
GTO.
And it's stuffed in a garage just maybe about 10 miles from here.
Right.
It's just so you're right. They're all over the place.
Would you take $1,000 for it?
No. Sorry. Make me pancakes first. We'll talk. Feed me some grits.
Well, can you make pancakes, Tom?
I'm a grits guy. I like my grits. And we'll talk.
So Tom throws down the gauntlet here.
See? Yeah.
See if we can find
right.
a car. Oh, I believe it.
Now, finding those cars in the radius is quite another story.
I believe it. Yeah, true.
You got to make friends with the guy. You know, people like the business of friends.
Yeah.
And you got to make friends. They have to find some common bond to like you. You know, and in this book, in the Hemi in the Barn, I have 20 tips on how to buy cars.
Right. You actually talk about tips to actually...
Oh, yeah. Like the car, the Riviera, you said it was in your mother's yard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody sees that car. Everybody knocks on the door. You want to sell it? No. Buy. And that's it. But if you go to the door and say, do you need parts for that car? Because I have parts. I have parts for that car if you need to buy them.
Awesome.
Whoa.
Yes.
What do you mean? Well, that starts a dialogue. And you probably get the same answer, but it's a different story.
I'll tell you, yeah. Tom, when I got the Riviera finally had to be junked after I rebuilt the suspension and the brakes and the fuel system. You know, the body went bad. So I took the engine and tranny out in the interior and got rid of the carcass, sold the engine and transmission, I have the road wheels and rear glass because it was a boat tail. And I've approached Riviera owners. Now, I'm not in the market for another boat tail Riviera, although I love them. And I've told people, listen, you need parts for that car? Because literally, I do have them. And I tell you, if the guy turned around and said, listen, I don't need the parts. You want to buy the car? If the offer was right, I'd have another Riviera.
Yeah, right. Well, you're part of the club then. You're like, you've got parts, and he's got the car, and you're one of me. You
know? Oh, I have parts. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. It bonds you to that owner because you have a commonality.
Wow. That is incredible. Any other tips that you can provide for those would-be barn finds?
Because that's a great one. That's one of my favorites.
That's a cool one.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, another one is just so simple. Go down dead-end roads. Streets that say no outlet, streets that say dead-end. You know, even pleasure cruisers, people that want to go out looking at homes on the weekends or whatever, they don't want to make a U-turn at the end of the block and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, you know, 95% of the people don't go down those roads. And so that's pretty good hunting territory.
Wow.
I got to tell you, I do live on a dead end. And I just noticed yesterday how many people go down the block and I was up real early. And they just, you know, they stop out at my house. And it was a couple months ago, a guy came down. I happened to be outside, and I have an old police car in my driveway, too. And he kind of did a turnaround in the driveway, but spotted the cop car. And you had to see his face. He did one of these, where was he? And he couldn't hightail it. So I'm going to move that car to the front of the house, I think. Just park it out front and say, stay away.
Every once in a while, Tom, I find a note, usually a handwritten note, and it's pinned on my 1984 Corvette that's sitting in the driveway that really has not moved in 4 years.
Wow.
I mean, I work on it every once in a while. I start it up. I get the juices flowing, and then I roll it back in.
Yours or the cars?
Yeah, right.
Because
yeah,
yours get pretty frothy. You should hear the stories.
But, of course, you know, life gets in the way, and your day-to-day job and the house is falling apart, and whatever cars that you're working on are falling apart and need attention to. So that,
what is it about Long Island, guys? And Corvettes and Mustangs. You know, I go when I come up here visiting, mm-hmm. and I go run for a couple hours through neighborhoods and stuff. Every third house has got either a Corvette or a Mustang under a piece of canvas.
Well, yeah. And out at the curb, you'll see when they clean the closets, the Capizios and the members-only jackets. You'll find those, too. Chris takes those, by the way. He does recycle them. Don't send them right to...
It's my new book, The Disco Ball in the Barn.
The Capizio in the shed. Right. No, you're right, Tom. You're right. I can say Mustangs are, even the new ones, you could argue, are plentiful and affordable.
Yeah.
Corvettes, not as much so for the average guy. They've been just a little bit of a step above. But, of course, now you get to the C4s, and you can get those cars really cheap if you, affordable to get into to a hot rod. So, yeah, I've noticed the same thing. But it used to be, you know, go back 20 years, 30 years, and I remember driving around, and you saw Roadrunners and GTOs, and they were, you know, Barracudas the same way. They were everywhere. Chevelles, in every
Mark
driveway.
Ones, everywhere.
You know, what were we thinking? We should have bought every one we could have gotten.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I had, you know, when you made $100 a week.
Right. It's true.
1975.
It really is true. The funny thing, what Ray and I have noticed, even while doing the show, is the amount of people that have actually offered cars to us for little to no money. Here, there's the car. Do you want to take it?
Chris has offered me a couple of cars.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah. Then again, I tried shoving a few his way, too.
Wow.
And that's how I acquired that Corvette, because of the old co-host we had here was retiring and moving to Reno, Nevada. And he had said to me, he said, look, I have a Corvette sitting in my driveway. Do you want it? And I said, I can't afford a Corvette. He said, I didn't ask you if you can afford it. I asked you if you wanted it. And I went, anyone that offers me a Corvette, I'll say yes.
And you'll pass it on to the next guy.
I'm hoping he will.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually want him to donate it to me so I can take the suspension out of it.
Yeah, Ray wants to cut it up.
I want to use the suspension in a resto mod. It's perfect.
He wants to turn it into a chess set.
Yeah, pretty much. Use my Sawzall and my torch.
516-572-7440. The phone line is open. Here at Motormouth Radio with Tom Cotter, we're talking about barn finds and all kinds of stuff like that. You actually found a Jaguar out here, didn't you, one time?
It was an older Jag, right?
I think.
Did I find a Jag on Long Island? Yeah.
Yeah, didn't you find a Jaguar? Because you made a statement one time to
Mark
us, which,
two or Mark three,
which I do now. You had said, look over your shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you said you were running and you were going down a block and or riding a bicycle maybe, and you look back because you get a vantage point different directions.
But that's when your wife gets really pissed off. Well, you look straight ahead.
Oh.
You know?
That's just one time.
Right.
I could tell you many more.
Yeah, I don't remember the Jag, but I probably found one. Who knows?
Really?
Maybe when we talked in January, I just had seen one. I don't know.
That was a look over the shoulder comment.
But I do remember the look over the shoulder. The reason being is because... we do something called the Mother's Day Show, and the Mother's Day show, because we never were able to get a guest on Mother's Day, we used to do the best of. Uh-huh. And now the best of are all the stories and all the what would you say, vignettes or anything that has gone horribly wrong. And all of those things end up in 1 hour segment. And that actually made it to one of the best of shows. And it was one of my favorites because it was just so simple. The tip for finding a barn find or finding a vehicle was just so unique yet so simple, where all you have to do is just look over your shoulder.
Look over your shoulder once in a while. Like, you can see behind one side of a building, but when you go by it, you can see behind the other side of the building, you know? Mm-hmm. Go in the wintertime. Go when leaves are off the trees. Right. You know, your vision is twice as far.
Was, in the book, there was a, was it a Superbird or a wing car that was found that way behind a grove of bushes that couldn't be seen in when the season was flush. Yeah.
Was right. that the car that's on the cover?
Yes. This is a mock shot. We just took that in a barn. But yeah, when this guy found this car,
we're talking about a Superbird.
It was grown inside a hedge. I mean, they had to start taking the hedge down so they could see it.
Holy.
I'll see if I can find this.
And again, people can hear that Mother's Day show on motormouthradio.com.
Yes.
What page does that live on? It lives on the download page at the bottom?
Yes. They're all at the bottom of the pretty much the 1 month worth of shows are on motormouthradio.com, and the Mother's Day shows are there. But you can also go to iTunes, correct?
Right. And there's a link on our website, motormouthradio.com, to the iTunes site through NCC, where you can find shows back to January. Have we gotten any
No, haven't yet.
We've got to get that guy working, don't we?
You have to go into the archives. I don't have them readily available. I actually have to go into the trunk.
Tell me. I'll bring them all to you. Yeah, the trunk, the shelf.
the shelf.
I have them all in date order, if you'd like.
Yes, I know you do.
In a folder. So just say the word, my friend, and you'll have it.
Tom Cotter, author of The Hemi in the Barn and The Cobra in the Barn, soon to be released The Vincent in the Barn, and many, many more books. Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. We got a lot more to talk about, so keep it where you got it. Motor Mouth Radio.
Let the Motor Mouths help you with all of your car questions at 516-572-7440.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time. Motor Mouth Radio on 90.3 FM WHPC.
Just being out in the woods.
I like to camp.
Hiking, fishing.
I love the trees in our backyard.
But there's this bug. It's killing the trees.
The emerald ash borer beetle. It lives in firewood.
You move firewood, you spread the beetle.
And our state is on the front lines.
I promise not to move firewood.
I promise to burn it where I buy it.
I promise.
Will you?
Learn more and promise you won't move firewood at stopthebeetle.info. A message from the USDA.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. We are going to take those calls. That phone line is open, 516-572-7440 on this Sunday afternoon. Tom Cotter showing us some pictures from the book, The Hemi in the Barn, where the tree was actually growing through the car.
Yeah,
and again, if people visit Motor Books Press, they can find all of Tom's books. And buy them up.
Buy them up.
Give them out for gifts.
Snap them up. Speaking of snapping them up, let's snap up this phone call. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths and Tom Cotter.
Hey, how you doing today?
Who's this?
Joe.
It's Joe.
Hey,
how are you, Joe?
What's up, Joe the Undertaker? How are you?
Doing all right. And yourself?
Doing okay.
What was that?
Doing okay. What's going on?
Yeah. You guys can tell me if you're on this subject. You can tell me if it's an urban legend or not. I remember hearing a story about a garage owner that bought himself, I thought it was, according to the story, an old Corvette or something like that, but he got it like right out of his showroom, limited mileage, just going from the showroom to his shop. And then he actually, when he had his garage built, he had it walled up.
Oh.
Oh, really?
All right, you took us on a different course there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that story, and there are some of those stories that are true. Guys bought Corvettes and walled them up, or save them for a daughter for a graduation present, whatever. I thought you were going towards he got in an accident on the way home, and they found him 6 months later, and he was rotting inside the car, and you can buy it for $500. I actually went to the police station when I was a kid, Suffolk County Police Station, and I was 16, and I go to the desk sergeant, and I said, "What about this Corvette I heard? The guy died inside it, and you can buy it for $500." He starts giggling, you know. Oh, guy, we just got rid of that yesterday, you know.
Urban legends. There you go, Joe.
This one, the way I heard it was that he never told anybody, and he passed away. The wife sold the business, and then the guy was looking at the new owner was looking at the floor plans, realized that there's part of the building missing on the interior as opposed to the exterior.
Right.
And then they found this thing.
Wow.
That's great.
40 years later.
Where was that supposed to be, Joe?
I didn't hear that detail.
Okay. Wow, what a find.
Yeah.
No kidding. Wow.
Son of a gun. Joe, thanks for the call.
No problem.
It's good hearing from you.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
Okay,
Take care. Bye-bye.
Is he really an undertaker?
It's cars.
Yeah, no, because you know, think about that. That would be the 21st way to find cars, is getting a hold of the undertaker who gets into hold of the widow and says, what'd your husband have in the garage that you might want
to
get rid of?
You have to
power
have a,
sores. And,
now, you have, to have a, you have to have a lot of tact to breach that subject at that time in a person's...
Sorry about your loss. You know, where are the keys to the garage?
Sorry for your loss. Can I look out back?
Let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Vic. What's up, Vic?
Nothing much. Same with the walled up cars. A friend of mine's aunt actually was the original owner of a Model A Roadster.
Right.
When they put an addition on the house, there was no room, so they put an addition on the addition and put the Model A Roadster in it and then put windows around it.
Wow. That's cool.
On Long Island. That's
really? Nice. Right here on Long Island.
Wow.
Vic, how many walled in friends do you have, I wonder?
Oh yeah.
You probably got a few of those, right?
A lot of them in the concrete business, too. Yeah. They don't know it.
Vic, what was your best garage find? Because you've got a lot of interesting cars through the years.
An Edsel.
An Edsel? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where'd you find it?
Up in Huntington.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you could tell the house on the block, believe me.
Ah.
The only one that stood out. My cousin was doing some plumbing work in it and had to go in the garage, and there was a path through the garage. And they said there was a car in there, so we moved boxes out of the way, and it was 58 Edsel, two-door.
Wow.
So I bought the car, and they said, yeah, we'll have it out in a couple months.
Uh-huh.
They didn't tell me that they were moving and taking it with them.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Right. Funny, well, I'm actually driving around your neighborhood now because there's a line at Calvin.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I just had a Seagrave pumper and a 68 Roadrunner.
Oh, the 68's a blue car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what that one is.
The Seagrave pumper almost behind your house.
Yeah, that I didn't see, but I know the Roadrunner. It's parked right in the short driveway. You can't miss that one. And I've looked at that car myself. But
keep going down that block about three blocks on the left and make a left, and the guy's got a fire truck in his front yard.
Okay, cool. I'll have to check that one out on the way home today. Yeah. Vic, you know the
you know what they're saying, though?
What's
about
that?
Stuff on Long Island?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember right now. Amityville has two Vincent Black Shadows, Amityville Copec Border. Out in Suffolk, I'm not going to say where, though, because the guy really doesn't, you know, a lot of people don't know it, but those Russian bikes, the...
Urals.
All these in the... Yeah, he's got probably about 6-7 of them.
Yeah, Ural, however you want to say.
Wow.
Yeah, those are pretty... You can find those, but those are nice little scores.
And don't worry, Vic, no one listens to the show.
Nah, I don't know. But the thing, Vic, that I find more amazing is, besides the cars that you've found, is the cars that people have given you.
Oh, yeah, well...
Tell Tom about the Hudson, how that happened. That thing just dropped off, right?
That's getting worked on, too, actually.
Yeah.
And I had a Corvair panel.
Oh,
I had
nice.
A chance to get.
Mm-hmm.
Motor burned. The guy put it in the garage and it stayed there for years, and I didn't take it.
Wow.
59 in power, 283 power pack car. I didn't take it because it had four flats.
It had four flats, right?
Oh. And you just talk to people.
Yeah, that's right.
Another thing is, if you go down the street and there's a car or something in front of a garage, like with a flat tire,
mm-hmm.
like let's say there's a Falcon out front or something like that, or I don't know, some kind of junk like that, you know there's something better inside that garage.
Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Out front, boat out front with flat tires and it's being used as storage, there's something in the garage too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Hallelujah. Vic, how much would you give for X-ray glasses? I pay thousands to get X-ray glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was doing a paver job for a guy out in, where the hell was it? Northport, I believe. And I went around the back of his house and he had a GTX on his back, patio. it used to be in the garage, but he had kids, and the kids' toys had to go in the garage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Talk about priorities.
So the X goes on the patio.
Wow. That's incredible. Vic, thanks so much.
Talk to you later, guys.
All right,
you
Vic,
got it, brother. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, I got some books to give away, you know? I'll give these books to a listener. All three of them. Yeah. All three listeners.
All three listeners. Let's see. We've already had four today, so we're above the curve.
Uh-huh. So what do you want to do? You want to take the first caller?
Yeah, and you know, Thomas said that if we don't get a chance to do it today, we can do this in pre-month.
You guys can stretch over a month, but what I have here is I have the Cobra in the Barn, which is the first Barn Find book, and this is the regular copy that you can get like at Barnes & Noble. And then I got the Hemi tomorrow, which is leather bound, and this is a special edition. I only made a couple hundred of these.
Nice.
Right.
And then the Vincent de Barnes, not out for like a month, but I've got my original author's review copy over there.
Wow.
So I'll sign
first
it.
First caller gets it, so go on. So come ready to dial.
So you tell me, I'll sign these things.
So what do you want to do? You want to give away one now?
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll do
we can do them over subsequent shows.
The other two on other shows.
As a tease.
Yes, that would be a good idea. Which one do you want to give away first, Tom?
I think the Coburn to Barn. You know, that thing has sold so many copies. They just gave me the numbers the other day. If you can sell 5,500 copies of a car book, you're like a genius. Like,
really?
The publishers love you. Love you. 5,500 copies.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, right. Well, this one's coming up on like 30-something thousand copies.
Wow.
So, you know, here it is 3 years after it's put on the... And you can go to almost any Barnes & Noble around the country, and it's still on the shelf, which is a good thing. So.
Yeah, I have seen it. All right, let's do it. First caller, 516-572-7440. And Tom Cotter, the author himself, will give you his issue of The Cobra in the Barn.
And you got to mail it out. That's the deal.
Yeah, we'll take care of that.
Not a problem.
So what's in the works in the future for Tom Cotter?
Well, I've got another Barn Find book coming out, probably called The Corvette in the Barn. That'll be out September 2010.
Ah.
So I'm working on that now. So if any listeners have a cool story, cars are cool, but I need a real good story to go along with the car.
Okay. Yeah. Let's take this call. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths. Hello? I hung up. Yeah. They hung up.
I want to hear about that TV Tommy Ivo book as well.
Well, that's the other one I'm working on right now. You know, as a kid, blinking again.
Yeah, let's try this one more time. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
How dare that person hang up on this gentleman? How you doing, guys? Mark,
look. Mark, how
Mark,
are you?
Guess what?
Did you get my pictures?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And you have the most perfect timing because you have just won yourself a copy of The Cobra in the Barn.
Oh, cool. Great. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
And I think I have your address on file because I think I sent you a shirt a while back.
Uh-huh. Yes, I believe you did.
And if I do, we'll send that. I'll send that book right out to you this week.
Does the
Cobra come with it?
No, but the barn does.
You got to find it.
You got to find it.
It's a scavenger book.
No, actually, you know what? We're going to make a codicil to this. I think when Mark's car comes out, when the Daphne comes out and we see it on the road,
right,
I think that's when we'll give him the book. How's that? A little incentive to work on the brakes, Mark?
Well, actually, I started to, and I have to finish. It's the Caravelle, by the way.
Oh, the Caravelle, I'm sorry.
It's electric, but anyway, yeah, because the old Z34 has a little transmission problem, starting to slip in third gear, which annoys the hell out of me.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wow.
Third gear? Strange. But, what can you do?
It's French.
Are you going to... No, the Caravelle.
No, the
Cavalier.
The Cavalier, I'm sorry.
No. Lumina, Z34.
Oh, okay. Z34. Yeah, we got it all wrong. Why not? What are you going to... Are you going to look into that yourself or go have it looked at professionally?
I'm going to have to look at it myself right now because the money is tight, you see.
Sure. Yes, sure.
Exactly.
Well, when you're ready, we have a tranny shop that can take care of that thing for you and do the right job.
And when we see you in your Renault Caravelle, we have a signed copy of The Cobra in the Barn for you. By the author himself, Tom Cotter.
Why, thank you. You'll probably see it sooner than later because
I'll be driving
that thing to slip off the parkway on me. The other one.
right.
It'll be my road car. Oh.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It'll be your primary vehicle.
Okay. Well, thank you. Either that or the Scout, right?
right, the Scout. Yeah. The pictures were great, and you can see those pictures at the motormouthradio.com. We have the message board, and the pictures of the fake poop were definitely exceptional. Exceptional.
Yeah, Hoots and Howls. Mark has the three top posts right now, which is great.
Yeah, Tom, Mark actually made with whiteout and black crayon, I think it was.
Yeah.
He put it over his his expired inspection sticker so that he would not get a ticket from... So this is the caliber of listeners we have here.
Well, the inventiveness abounds.
You know what scares me? Everybody that calls, you know. How many? It's like, are these all cousins or something?
No, probably they are. Yeah, we all probably related somehow if you go back far enough. But no, these are all loyal following here.
They just say hello and you, hey, Joe.
Hey. Actually, I'll tell you the truth. The first two calls were guys that, well, Bob has called before, but Eric, the first time we spoke to him.
Yeah, exactly. So you got a mixed bag here. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for the book. I appreciate it. I will read it
and enjoy it.
You're going to love
you
it.
You will love it, yes. Thanks. It's definitely
thanks
cool.
Thanks a lot, guys. You have a good good weekend, whatever's left of it.
Okay,
thanks, Mark, you too. Yeah. Bye-bye. That was awesome.
That's cool. Mark is great. Very inventive guy.
Yes, he is. Anyone who can invent poop.
He's almost more tenacious than we are with keeping an old, rusty vehicle on the road. He really is, because the Scout...
First, yeah.
He really works doggedly at keeping that thing going,
mm-hmm.
which I got to admire because it's, you know, that's kind of the car guy spirit.
Exactly.
But TV Tommy Ivo.
TV Tommy Ivo.
We only have about a minute or two.
No, oh, we got
man. I got 10 minutes to talk.
I know.
Right, exactly.
We'll
TV
continue
Tommy
after
Ivo,
the show.
I mean, I've gotten to know this guy after admiring him in the 60s, you know, building the two-engine dragster, the four-engine dragster.
Yeah.
He'd travel around the country, go to every little drag strip and make $500, $1,000 three times a week. He went to Islip Speedway at the drag strip, eighth of a mile. He ran New York National Dragway.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, he was the first touring guy. And, you know, the kid that used to go with him and tune up the car, wipe off the tires, was Don Prudhomme.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's like,
wow.
You know, he's the one that brought Cha-Cha Muldowney, Charlie Muldowney, from obscurity. They went match racing around the country.
Nice.
So
holy
that book
cats.
Will be out February 2011, just in time for Amelia Island. And Tommy will be there signing books at Amelia Island 2011.
Holy
yeah,
God.
I'm waiting for that one myself.
Yes. TV Tom. Because the first time I saw him, and now tell me if I'm wrong, because it's been so long, I think he was on the Munsters.
Oh, he's been on like 150 mm-hmm. movies. 100 movies, 150 TV shows. But I saw him on Leave It to Beaver, or My Three Sons. He was on Margie's show.
Mm.
But literally since he's 6 years old, he's been an actor.
Wow. Yeah.
Who just liked to drag race. Those are Oldsmobile engines in that car, I think.
Buick. Nailhead
Buick.
Yes, Buick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well.
Tom Cotter.
Boy, that hour flew.
It certainly did. Author of The Cobra in the Barn, The Hemi in the Barn, soon to be released, The Vincent in the Barn. We have two more books to give away in subsequent episodes of Motormouth Radio. Tom, thank you so much.
It was a blast.
It certainly was.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Love to see you again, and our three listeners would love to hear you.
Wow.
For Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. This was Motormouth Radio. See you later.